listening to the Food Talk Show on channelradio.co.uk. It's the Food Talk Show on channelradio.co.uk with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hello, how are you doing, Paul? Hello.
Do you know what?
Would you like to turn me on?
I'm going to turn your mic up as well. That would really be good, wouldn't it?
Hello, Paul. How are you doing now?
I'm really well, thank you.
Good. We've just had a lovely week as far as the weather's concerned this week. I don't suppose you've got your legs out, have you, this week?
No. It's been really odd, actually, because I was doing my Business Bunker show on Tuesday back at our other studio in Dimchurch, and it was an absolutely glorious day down on the farm on Tuesday, and everybody kept tweeting me hundreds of pictures of flooding from all over London and all over Canterbury. There were these huge downpours, and I was going, ha, 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 it's perfect down here by the seaside. And then at 6 o'clock, the heavens
absolutely
opened,
and it absolutely tipped
it down. So
well, I've been really enjoying being in the garden, and particularly enjoyed getting some great English asparagus at the moment, because as you know, it's the asparagus season. So we've got a really great We Hate Heston, which is about cooking salmon and asparagus, which is a marriage made in heaven, of course. So we're going to talk about that. I've got the lovely Sarah Sturt here. Many people will know that she is the editor of Kent Life. And she's got lots of interesting things to say about food and drink and restaurants around Kent, because we are really blessed, I think, in this county for that. And we've got a really amazing guy called Danny Lowe, who's come. And I know you don't normally have lunch on a Thursday, because the producers come in and we're very kind. They give us free samples and then you eat all that. But Danny's a chewing gum maker. So you're not going to have much to eat today, Paul.
That's true. That is very true. Although, I was explaining earlier, I am actually a fan of gum. Some time ago, my dentist told me that I must chew gum. Sugar-free gum, but I must chew gum because it generates saliva in the mouth, and that saliva kills the bacteria and the plaque. And they actually sell chewing gum in my dentist's.
I'd like them to get Danny's chewing gum. Mm. We're going to talk to him about that, because I don't actually understand what chewing gum is. I don't actually know what it is. So I'm sure he's going to tell me.
It's rubber, isn't it?
I'm not sure. All I remember is that my mum used to say to me, you weren't allowed to swallow it because it would stick to your heart. And I don't actually never quite understood what that meant or how that worked.
It also showed a remarkable lack of anatomical knowledge by the previous generation, really, didn't it?
Yes, it did indeed. It did indeed. The thing with Danny's gum is it's an energy gum.
Right.
And we have Daisy, who works in our office, who drinks Red Bull every morning. We call it Breakfast of Kings. She has a Red Bull and a cigarette, not entirely the most healthy thing you should do. And that's an energy drink. And maybe we could convert her from Red Bull to your chewing gum, I'm thinking, Danny, later.
Yeah, sounds great.
Great. Okay.
Or you could really go mad and she could do both.
Oh, no.
But then you'd probably damage the ceiling tiles, wouldn't you?
Yeah, really? I need her to concentrate on our accounts.
Cool.
What do you want to do next? Shall we?
I'm going to play some cheesy tunage, and then I think we can talk to Sarah. Yeah, because I do believe that Sarah is the editor of Kent Life magazine.
She is, and I can't believe you have something to do with chewing gum.
No. But how about Park Life?
Confidence is a preference for the habitual voyeur of what is known as a morning suit. Can be avoided if you take a route straight through what is known as John Scott Brewer's group. He gets intimidated by the dirty pigeons. They love a bit of him. Who's that gut lord marching? You should cut down on your pork life, mate. Get some exercise.
Hand in hand, road there, Park Life. Now what I mean?
get up when I want, except on Wednesdays when I get rudely awakened by the dustman. I put my trousers on, have a cup of tea, and I think about leaving the house. I feed the pigeons, I sometimes feed the sparrows too. It gives me a sense of enormous well-being. And then I'm happy for the rest of the day, safe in the knowledge there will always be a bit of my heart devoted to it. You know, and it's not about you joggers who go round.
Damon and Blur there, Park Life. Get it?
I think that's quite tenuous.
It was very tenuous. I did warn you.
Mm. I'm going to just ignore your cheesy tunage and just
most
carry
people
on.
Do, funnily enough.
So I'm going to talk to Sarah Sturt. She's editor of Kent Life. Sarah's an award-winning journalist. She was Kent Feature Journalist of the Year in 2006 and a recipient of the Visit Kent Chairman's Award. And her magazine was named Kent Magazine of the Year at the first ever Kent Press and Broadcast Awards.
Wow.
So she's a pretty damn good journalist. For anybody that doesn't know the sort of life magazines, they're all around the country. So you get Cheshire Life and you get Kent Life and Lancashire Life. And they're those lovely glossy county luxury local magazines you get. And they feature events and amazing properties. I'm sure your house is probably in there, Paul. And I guess in a way it's a celebration of where people live. So you get articles on fascinating people, in-depth views of some of the sort of towns and villages around the county.
You say that. I actually did buy a house that I saw in Kent Life.
Did you really?
I did, yeah.
But that was expensive.
Many years ago, I bought a house that I saw in Kent Life, which I sadly had to sell due to family annoyance.
Yes.
Or divorce, as it's normally called, some years ago. But it was a gorgeous house, and I thoroughly enjoyed living
there. Well, Kent Life is renowned for that. But also, you can imagine Sarah's met and seen lots and lots of different things around the county. So I'm very, very interested on her journeys around Kent and also her opinions on food and drink offerings. Mm. Also, you might not know, Paul, but her magazine runs the Food and Drink Awards along with Kent on Sunday.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's a great way of celebrating and helping local producers to raise their profile. So welcome, Sarah. You've got a copy of the latest Kent Life in front of you. So
Four weeks.
It must be quite a strain because I think there's 172 pages there. That's a lot.
Yes,
that's a lot of content. Yeah, and what's the highlights of the edition that's just about to be published?
The July edition is we're focusing on our three towns: our Whitstable.
I love Whitstable,
which is wonderful.
Yeah,
because we always do it in July for the Oyster Festival.
Yes,
Maidstone and Tunbridge, is where I live and where I put the magazine together from my spare room. Not a glossy suite of offices as people think.
Yes, I'm sure. So if I could just ask you, Whitstable, if we take that, is a real foodie destination for
me. Yeah.
My favourite being Wheeler's Oyster.
Yes, it's
Bar,
fantastic.
Which I believe is closed down at the moment for a really, really big refurbishment. Have I got that right?
Yeah. Tough timing for them, but needs must.
Are you a fan of oysters?
I do like a a nice oyster. I'm a great fan of seafood. It is one of my favourite things.
Yeah.
And we do it very well on the Kent Coast.
Yeah. And Whitstable, of course, there's great seafood restaurants all along there. And what a great place to go for the day.
Yeah.
You've got the beach and... It's probably the best place to go for chips, actually. It's my personal opinion.
They always taste better down by the sea, don't they, chips?
Yes, they do.
That, yes. Salty tang.
And was Tunbridge and Maidstone, I don't actually know the food scenes there much. Have we got some good restaurants and stuff in those?
Well, they're not necessarily just food focuses that the town features. There's a lot going on in Tunbridge, for example. Mm. We've just come out of a major high street improvement scheme, and the foodie scene is really, really improving there. Maidstone, I still think it's got quite a long way to go on the food scene, but it is our county town, and I do like to celebrate. That's the whole ethos of the magazine, and remind people that it's not just that great big roundabout to get round, park up, and there's fantastic history. And the river, there's so much life going on the river, Tunbridge, right the way through
really,
the town.
Isn't it? Because the road goes, it's sort of, you don't see the river really anymore, which is a real shame.
Yeah, you can make an effort and get down there and take a river trip. We've
Paul,
got eight best boat trips, so that's included.
And Paul, you've got offices in Maidstone, haven't you?
I have indeed.
Where would you recommend to eat? What's your sort of
Frederico's.
Favourite eateries?
Yes.
Frederico's in the Corn Exchange.
Is that Italian?
It's French.
French?
Yeah, it's a French bistro-y place in the Corn Exchange. Absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's not particularly big. It's a bit like, it's slightly bigger than Wheeler's. It's not always easy to get in there because it's not so big, but that's lovely, especially at lunchtime.
And Il Vesuvio is lovely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is the sister restaurant of the one in Tunbridge Wells.
Yep.
On Camden Road.
Yeah.
Family run and brilliant Italian.
Absolutely. I have to say, and I'll get punched for this probably, but one of the places I eat the most is actually the White Horse on Bursted Green. Mm. And it's because it's convenient. It's a lovely venue.
Yeah.
And I probably eat there about two, maybe even three times a week.
A week? Wow.
A week, yeah. Well, I have lots of business meetings and I don't like meeting in town or in offices, so I have a tendency to meet in pubs and restaurants for some weird reason.
It's got that great village green, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And during the spring and summer, it's gorgeous because you can sit outside on the green, as Sarah says.
So as editor of Kent Life, is you must have so much experience of the county. Is there anything you think we really, really excel at in this county as opposed to other counties? Not just food necessarily, but...
I think we're a very can-do county, and I do genuinely think that stems back from our role in history. We are the frontline county, and I seem to encounter people all over Kent who just roll up their sleeves and get on with it. I think the volunteer sector in Kent is superb. There are a lot of philanthropists as well, who are very quietly injecting a lot of money into the county, not making a song or dance about it.
That's true philanthropy, though, isn't it? Not doing
absolutely.
It for PR reasons.
Not
it's doing
for
it because,
they really don't want to be interviewed. They don't want to talk about it, but they're
put millions in me.
Of course you have. You're not the sort of philanthropist we're talking about. We're talking about the shy and retiring one. So I think that's often overlooked. I think we're very good at that, and people don't seem to have any side to them. You know, they're just nobody standoffish. I've had welcome from the great and the good. People you would think you might be a little bit nervous around are just normal people, and just really, really happy to be part of what we do, which is celebrate this great county.
And in terms of celebrating, is there any particular sort of food products or food produce you think that the county is very, very good at in particular? Or is it just very varied?
Yeah. I think people do also forget that we have this huge agricultural, horticultural heart. I mean, it is about 85%.
Yep.
And people do sometimes. I mean, you don't hear it quite so often. Oh, Kent is just somewhere you drive through to get onto a ferry port.
It's very rural.
It is extraordinarily rural. I know it's sort of, it's dominated by its M20. Mm. But... if you take Ashford, for an example, where we are, just 2 minutes in any direction and you are in glorious countryside.
Absolutely.
With beautiful places like Goddington House to visit, lovely little villages. So I think it is still somewhere that people need to discover. Mm. And I think we do beaches brilliantly. We have so many blue flag beaches, and they're glorious.
Absolutely.
When you think how many people flock to Rye and Camber Sands and Brighton, and we have these golden, unspoiled, beautiful, uncrowded beaches.
Absolutely. Our other studio is at Dymchurch,
yes.
And you've got St Mary's Bay, and Dymchurch Beach itself is a really gorgeous
yes.
beach. It's a lovely beach.
And people don't really get it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's so much to take in with Kent.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. It's a county of many contrasts, though,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yes.
You know, because there's so many different things to it and so many different elements to it as a county.
Yes. It is hard to pinpoint.
Mm. And obviously the wine growing is become a really interesting
exciting,
thing in Kent.
Isn't it?
Yes, have you had much contact with that as part of the magazine? And brewing, of course, brewing and
I
winemaking.
I don't personally brew, but I'd love to have a go at it. Yeah, the whole microbrewery side, I think the explosion of that is very exciting. I mean, we've got our stalwarts in Kent, the Chapel Downs, who make headlines internationally all over the place.
And cider, of course.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I'm very fond of Biddenden, their range that they do. Particularly, have you tried their Ortega?
Yes,
the dry
I have.
White? It's absolutely delicious. Mm. Hush Heath,
you know,
we've got a wonderful outfit where they're based. I mean, that's truly impressive.
We recently spoke to some guys producing sparkling wine, didn't we, from Woodchurch Wine.
Yes.
A really, really tiny producer, but producing some fantastic stuff.
Oh, that's
stuff
interesting.
Again.
I'll have to talk to
It's going to be interesting to see what happens when Tattinger start making their
absolutely.
First. I think it's about 2 or 3 years it's going to be.
I know, it's such a compliment. But our soil is the same as Champagne soil. You know, you take the Channel out of the way and we are northern France. So we do fizz.
Yes.
Brilliantly.
It'd be interesting to know whether they're actually allowed to call it champagne or not. I think that's an interesting point.
That's going to be interesting because one of the French champagne companies has recently bought land in Kent on which to grow and produce.
Tattinger.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're going to call it.
That's what I'm saying. What are they going to call it?
I mean, what are they going to call it? You know, if they call it champagne, then the rest of us can as well, can't we?
Well, absolutely. Exactly. There can be a whole sea change out there. Mm. Very interesting. The Battle of the Champagnes. Because it's hard to have to remember to say sparkling when you're clearly drinking champagne.
Yeah, because that's why I'm a fan, really. I'm teetotal, so I don't drink any of this stuff. But if I did, I would drink rough old wife cider. Just because there's no messing with
name,
that. There's no messing with that. You know where you are with that.
Moving on swiftly. You wrote a really nice article a little while ago about the sort of indigenous recipes and particular foodstuffs from Kent. And in your article, you were writing about things called Huffkins. No idea what that is. Canterbury pudding, cherry batter pudding, ginger cob nut cake, Folkestone pudding pie. And gypsy tart. Now, I have heard of gypsy tart.
Yes, probably from school days.
Yeah, exactly.
I went to school in Kent, secondary school, and I'm sure we used to have gypsy tart quite a lot. Mm. Did you used to have that, Paul?
Oh, I used to buy gypsy tart on the gypsy tart futures market at school because I was one of the few people that liked it. So I bought everybody else's gypsy tart at lunchtime.
It's quite sweet, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think that was spurred by a conversation I had with produced in Kent. Mm. That although we have some wonderful products in Kent, we don't have one that has got Kent in the name,
sure.
like Yorkshire pudding.
Or Cheshire cheese. Yeah.
Cheshire cheese. Mm. And why not? Mm. I mean, that really is a challenge to all the producers out there. We should be, with all our wealth of produce, be able to have something that is just automatically
Kentish.
Absolutely.
Conjures up Kent.
By name. Sorry to interrupt, Sue, but I've heard of Huffkins. Yeah. I haven't heard of Canterbury pie and Folkestone
pudding pie.
Folkestone pudding pie. Mm. No? Has anybody got any idea what's in it?
No, well, the thing with those is that there'll be some sort of historic, you know, recipe that somebody's made, and then there'll be lots of different versions of it. So it's actually quite difficult to pin down.
Yeah.
I think what gypsy tart has actually ended up having a very specific recipe. Mm. So gypsy tart has just got... I think it's evaporated milk.
It's got condensed
brown
milk
sugar.
In it, yes.
Yeah, and
you'd need your all Dan's chewing gum after that.
Yes. and it's just recover. It's just literally a pie crust, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's emerged as having a single recipe, but I think the others
with pink custard.
With pink custard.
With pink custard.
What is that? Oh, what is that, pink custard?
We used to have gypsy tart with pink custard at school.
Okay. I've
what
never
is
had pink custard?
Custard?
What is pink custard?
It
it's custard. It's coloured pink.
Okay.
What colouring are they putting? It's probably angel.
It was just, I don't know, strawberry or raspberry colouring in it. We seriously, I'm not fibbing. We used to have pink custard.
Paul, that's Angel Delight you're thinking of.
Huh?
That's Angel Delight you're thinking of.
No, no, no. Seriously, we had pink custard. If anybody else remembers pink custard from school,
I remember
me.
Green custard from school.
Green?
Yes, mint. Mint.
No, I never
I don't
had
know
that.
Where you lot went to school. I really don't. I'm going to move on from pink and green custard.
The Hufkins
okay.
story.
Yes.
Do you
I
know,
don't know Hufkins.
Yes,
what is Hufkins?
That's well, literally a baker's wife getting in a huff with her husband and the baker and his lovely fresh batch of rolls going in and I'm miming putting my thumb in the middle of each of the rolls. In a half.
Right.
And instead of ditching the whole lot, he decided to make a virtue out of it, gave it a name, and it became the Hufkin, which was rather paying her back, really.
So it's a roll with a sort of...
With an indentation.
With a thumb-shaped hole in the
yeah.
middle.
Very good. I didn't know that one at all. Did not know that one.
Nowadays, you could put a hot dog in that or something, couldn't you?
Only if you're Paul Andrews. We're much healthier, which when we talk to Danny, he'll be able to give you some tips on healthiness. Have you got any particular restaurant that you really, really like in the county that is your... Oh, you're not allowed to say that as
gosh,
an editor because you'll never
to,
get in.
I
again.
Know, I'm going to you say alienate you like, everybody else.
You say I, you like fish.
Yeah, I do love seafood, yeah. Mm. I think I'm going to... I can answer that by saying that try as we might, nearly... Well, every year since we started our Food and Drink Awards, Chapter 1 over at Locks Bottom have been in there somewhere, either as Restaurant of the Year or Chef of the Year. Mm. And I'm entering the Magazine of the Year category yes. again, and you tend to think, oh, there's no point entering it again. They're going to give it to somebody else. And we do try very hard not to give it to Chapter 1, but they have proved impeccable when the judges have been there.
Absolutely.
I've never been there. I've never been.
Oh, I have, yeah.
Good.
I used to own a small business in Green Street Green, which is just around the corner from
oh,
where they
right,
are.
Yes.
Gave you the perfect excuse.
Absolutely.
A very lovely excuse.
I'm quite keen on The Sportsman. It's one of my
yes,
favourites.
Yes.
I just like the way they use local produce. And also, you go there and you'll eat something different. It's definitely stuff you couldn't cook at home because they source so well.
Well, it's an extraordinary use of literally
yeah.
things that people would ignore, like seaweed and
yes.
making your own salt. Yeah. It is. It always was out there, but it's garnered so many accolades and
yeah.
awards.
Yes. There's just a bit like Sarah was saying earlier, or we were saying earlier when we were talking to her about the eclectic nature of Kent. There's an eclectic range of restaurants as well. I mean, you say to me, what's your favourite restaurant? Do you know, I haven't got a favourite because there's literally dozens,
the,
you know.
The mood and the
you know,
situation.
It depends on where you catch me and where I'm thinking about. Mm. But, you know, like JoJo's in Whitstable or the Roxall or the
I'm
Milk House at Sissinghurst. Or,
I'm a fan of JoJo's. I think they're really...
It's quirky. It's different.
Mm. And it's good. It's good yeah. tapas. Good, yeah. great seafood, actually. Yeah.
And some just come into their own because of the time of year.
Exactly,
You know, the seafront ones always,
yeah.
always
Or even
alive.
The Three Chimneys at Bindon is a nice winter restaurant.
Absolutely.
Big open fireplaces and all of that.
And on pubs. Haven't Kent pubs come on?
Yeah, absolutely.
The food offer.
Yeah,
I think it has to now, though, Sarah.
It had to,
because I don't think people... It's hard to run a pub now and make some money, and therefore the food offering has just got to be good. And I do think people have upped their game.
Completely so.
And needed to.
Yeah. And it's almost a bit of a cliche to use local produce, but thank God they are.
They do,
And people
absolutely.
Genuinely are. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Which is really good. I'm going to ask you a little bit about journalism now. Have you got any tips or I don't know, hints or whatever for people who want to enter into journalism? And by that, I mean in its widest sense. So there's a lot of people thinking, I'm going to start my own blog or I might do my own little website. Lots and lots more people are writing than they ever used to before. However, the skill of writing is the same as it ever was, no matter what the medium. Is that true? And have you got any tips?
Well, I hope the skill and good writing is still important. The challenge with things like blogs and social media is you don't craft your words probably quite as thoroughly as you do for a publication that's got a very long shelf life, like Kent Life has. And I have a team of freelance writers. I don't have any editorial staff. There's me, but I have a budget which goes on photography and some key writers. And you learn to absolutely love the writers who present perfect copy, and it's engaging and it's different and it's quirky and it's just going to appeal to the readership. So it is a skill, and I'd hate to see it die. My particular method was to work on literally every single role I could think of connected with journalism and work my way up. So I would always know. Nobody could pull the wool over my eyes, from production to subbing to proofreading to writing to reporting, feature writing.
But I think that's good advice for any business.
If it's possible to
do. You know, I think
this
if you can work your way around the whole business, then when you are
not
in charge...
Not be too precious about it.
Yeah, you've got a really good view and you can help people.
When I first started work, age 14, I was giving a piece of advice. I worked at Turkey Mill. When it was still a paper mill in Maidstone, excuse me, and the advice I was given by one of the old guys there was, first learn your own job, then learn everyone else's.
Yeah.
And that has stood me in fantastic stead for the rest of my life in terms of work and other things, really. It's true.
Yeah, I think it's right. And whilst the social media is transient, and sometimes your magazines must be around for a couple of years.
Terrifyingly so.
Yes, they've got to stand up and be interesting, haven't they?
Exactly.
How do you choose the topics that go in there? How do you work out, today we're gonna do Whitstable this month, and we're gonna...
Well, we do set out our platforms almost a year in advance. Like, I'll be getting together with a few of my key colleagues, including the circulation team, in August to decide our 2017 towns, because we love to give a county spread. I mean, that's our remit, really. I can't just write about West Kent, where I'm from. We're in every edition embracing the entire county. And we set the themes for like the homes and interiors, things like that. But the bit that most excites me is the jam in the middle, the features, which are more month by month. I tend not to plan too far ahead,
so
I can be flexible.
Yeah.
But there are various anniversaries that are going to bring their own remit. When we had Magna Carta, 800, I gave a whole addition feature-wise to that and the impact on Kent. Coming up, I've got in July the Battle of the Somme, 100 years on, and the impact on Kent. And
just some really interesting, it's a really interesting mix, I think, in the magazine.
There's a lot of history and heritage, which I particularly love, but research has shown that with food and drink, history and heritage of Kent is way up there. Which is
absolutely
very,
and of course, with your type of magazine, not so much in social media, but with what you do, photography is everything.
It is,
and very very high quality photography.
Yes, when I took over the magazine 11 years ago, that was one of the things I immediately wanted to change. It was a bit generic, and I couldn't work out what was wrong with the magazine until I realised it hadn't got any faces in it. There was a distinct lack of people.
Right,
it's
okay.
Much easier to photograph a landscape.
Horses. And houses.
But to get the number of people, the number of faces we do in a magazine takes an awful lot of planning.
That's interesting, isn't it? Isn't that an interesting insight?
Yeah.
Because you don't notice it until you say.
Yeah, yeah.
And because I read Kent Life a lot, and have done for many, many years. And as soon as you said it, I recognised it.
You know what I mean?
But it hadn't kind of struck me before. Yeah. That's really interesting.
It took me a while to work it out. Mm. And then we had offices in Maidstone when I first started. Mm. And I met a local photographer by the wonderful name of Manu Palameke. He wandered up into my... I know, Basque heritage. Very English, though. Wandered up into my offices. We hit it off, and he's been my principal freelance photographer ever since. Cool. I say the bulk of my budget goes on his photography, because, as you say, it's absolutely critical for a lifestyle magazine.
Absolutely.
And to get the continuity of standard throughout.
Well, I love the Life magazines, actually. They're one of those things where if it's Sunday afternoon, it's raining, or I don't know, you just feel like you can indulge yourself and not feel guilty. It's definitely worth a really good look through. And I love the thought that it's a celebration. That's your remit, isn't it, to celebrate.
It's so easy to knock places. Of course. But there's always the upside, the silver lining.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for coming to talk to us today.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. Really fascinating talk. I'll tell you what we're going to do now, Sue. Should we do a bit of We Hate Heston?
Yes, that's a good idea. I wanted to do something to do with asparagus because it's that time of the year and I just eat loads of asparagus now because it's...
You know what they say about asparagus, don't they?
Yes, you're not going to even talk about that, Paul. But there's only a really short 6-week window when you get great English asparagus. So this is my little recipe. And you know, you always say you don't have time to cook and all that sort of stuff. This literally took 14 minutes to cook from scratch. Really easy, don't really need much skill involved. So I expect you to be cooking this in the next couple of weeks, Mr. Andrews.
Okie doke. Well, let's have a listen. We Hate Heston.
Well, it's the middle of June, nearly the middle of June. We've had some lovely, lovely hot days. And of course, this is the time for English asparagus. I really don't like asparagus from Peru and from other countries because it's airlifted here and it's not actually ripe. It ripens in the hold. If you wait until the British asparagus starts coming through, which is normally about 6 to 8 weeks, sort of May, June, July, it tastes just amazing. It just tastes fantastic. And I have to say that in the summer, I probably eat asparagus nearly every single day for that 6 weeks. And then I have to wait the whole of the next year until I can eat it again. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to cook salmon and asparagus pasta. So making the most of some lovely Scottish salmon, some British grown asparagus, and then just some creme fraiche and butter and some pasta to go with it. Pretty simple. So I like to sort of deconstruct this dish and then put it all together at the end. First thing I'm going to do is fry my salmon. Now, you could grill salmon, you could put it in the oven, but personally, I think you can't do anything better than frying salmon. And the reason why I fry salmon is if you can get the pan up fairly hot, it means you get that nice crispy stuff on the outside. And actually, the salmon inside is not rare exactly, but definitely very juicy and very, very pink. So I'll just put some butter in this frying pan here. I know it's naughty having butter, but it makes it taste so good. And I'm going to fry a salmon fillet per person if you've got nice hungry people, and probably about 6 or 7 pieces of asparagus. But we'll start cooking the salmon first. So I've taken the skin off my salmon. I've cut it into bite-sized chunks. And I'm just putting those in the pan now. Don't stir them. Resist the temptation to stir them. Let the nice chunks of salmon get a bit brown on the outside before you turn them over. While that's cooking away, get your pasta on, whichever pasta you like. Could have spaghetti or spirally stuff or whatever it is that you like. Get that cooking, and you'll need to do that in very, very hot boiling water, bit of salt. Make sure it's a really good rolling boil and probably cook the pasta for 10 to 11 minutes. While that's cooking, it should be just the right amount of time to finish off your salmon. I've got a really nice brown coated salmon on the at the moment, so I'm going to turn those over now. So those are looking fabulous. I'm going to pull them out of the pan in just another 20-30 seconds, and I'm going to leave them to rest. So actually what's happening is the salmon's cooking, even though it's out of the pan, still should be nice and juicy. What's left behind is some butter and some lovely, lovely fish juices, and then I'm going to cook my asparagus separately in that. Now I'm cooking the salmon and asparagus separately so that I can pay attention to both. If I try and put the asparagus in the pan with the salmon at the same time, the asparagus might get cooked nicely, but the salmon might not, or the salmon might get cooked nicely and the asparagus won't. So if you do them separately and then join them together at the end, you know you've cooked them just right. So I've got some asparagus in front of me. The best thing to do is to snap the asparagus by hand because it will naturally break where the woody bit is. So if you just do it nice and gently, it'll just snap exactly where it needs to, and you discard those woody ends. And then I actually put those in
as they are, or you could, if you prefer, chop them up into bite-sized chunks and throw them in the pan. Turn the pan down just a little bit. I'm just going to chuck those asparagus bits in now. So I've still got my spaghetti boiling away. I'm doing spaghetti today. You might do any other sort of pasta, and you can hear my asparagus cooking. Asparagus, I'm just doing nice and gently. I've added a little bit more butter, and it's just slowly sautéing away. Do that for about 6 or 7 minutes. My spaghetti is just about coming up ready to be drained. I've got my lovely, lovely asparagus cooked here to just the way I like it. Not too soft, but not too hard. I'm now going to add the salmon back into the pan. And some lovely fish juices have leached out the salmon while it's been resting. So that's gone back in the pan. Give that a stir. Not too much, because you don't want the salmon to break up. Now I'm going to add a nice squeeze of lime. It's looking good, and I quite like creme fraiche, so I like it a little bit sour. If you prefer it a little bit sweeter, then use single cream. I'm mixing that all together, and now I've got a sort of limey, buttery, creamy, lovely juice. I'm just going to add some black pepper, and now I'm going to add my spaghetti into that pan. Give it a good old mix. And can now dish that up. So dish that up, a bit more black pepper. If you like basil or coriander, put that on the top. You may like a bit of Parmesan cheese. I'm not a great fan of Parmesan cheese with salmon. But here it is, a beautiful pile of spaghetti. A lovely bit of salmon, asparagus, creamy, limey sauce, and I've just poured myself a lovely glass of white wine to go with it. Nice and easy. Nice and easy. And a glass of white wine to go with it.
That's always the kicker at the end, isn't it?
Eh? Well, yeah. What can I say? Mm. But asparagus, just go out and get it at the moment. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Absolutely. Well, should we talk to young Danny?
Yeah, this is really interesting and very different from some of the other guests that we've had. So I've got two packets in front of me, and they look like Strepsils, Paul.
Yeah, they're blister packs. They're what they're called, blister packs, aren't they?
You know those things that you have when you have a sore throat, you know, and about the size of that. So I'm gonna. It's chewing gum. It doesn't look like chewing gum. It looks like a pastel. So Danny, welcome.
Thank you.
And your product is called Blockhead. Explain exactly what it is. You call it energy gum.
So it's a caffeine and vitamin gum, effectively. So you'll notice it looks completely different to normal chewing gum, and it's produced in a completely different way. But it's effectively, well, as I say, a caffeine and vitamin gum, the benefit of which is it acts faster than, say, an energy drink would, or a Pro Plus tablet or something like that, because you absorb it through your gums underneath your tongue. So it's a really fast way of getting things into the body. Completely sugar-free as well.
I'm chewing on one now.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like chewing gum. It's really good now, because Paul can't say anything. He's just put one in his mouth as well. But the mouthfeel is exactly like chewing gum. It's got that little crunchy bit on the outside. Mm. And then when you get into it, I'm trying to chew and talk at the same time here.
Don't say. Wow. There we go, Danny. You've cracked it, mate. Chewy chewing gum.
And tastes really, really nice. So I'm chewing this at the moment. I've literally just been for a minute. What's happening to me now, and what's in it?
So what's happening at the moment is it's a compressed energy gum. So it's releasing all the active ingredients, which is why it's different to a normal chewing gum. So what's happening now is you're chewing it round, and the active ingredients, so the caffeine, the vitamins, all that sort of thing, the B vitamins are being released into your bloodstream through your mouth. So you're not swallowing it down like you would a drink or something like that. So
I can now go back into my office, and I'll be full of energy, and I'll be telling everybody what to do, and it's going to give me a boost.
Typing away 100 miles an hour.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. So we've got in there, this is the one I'm eating at the moment, got in there caffeine, taurine. What's taurine?
It's an amino acid, so it's the sort of thing you have in Red Bull as well, which is meant to increase the effect of caffeine.
And then we've got vitamins. So in this one, what have you got?
We've got a series of B vitamins in it. So most of the B vitamin complexes on there, which are known for sort of contributing towards energy yielding metabolism, is the
energy yielding metabolism. And on your packaging and on your website, it says that obviously what's happening is this energy boost is being released directly through your gums rather than through your stomach. And you claim this gives you an energy boost 5 times faster than, say, drinking Red Bull.
Yeah.
How is that? Is it because it's getting into your bloodstream almost immediately?
Yeah. So if you take a drink or a tablet like Pro Plus or something like that, you'd be swallowing it down and you'd have to be digesting it through your digestive system. Yep. Whereas when you take an energy gum, you're absorbing it through your gum, so it's being absorbed through the gum, underneath the tongue, and through something called the buccal mucosa, which is just slightly at the back of your throat.
That's the new word of today.
Absolutely. I'm actually enjoying this. I'm actually enjoy chewing it. And I, as I said to Danny earlier, I am a user of normal chewing gum normally. So it's something that I'm used to doing.
Tastes nice, doesn't it?
And I'm enjoying this. Yeah. I am enjoying it, which is a bit of a problem because I'm trying to talk and chew at the same time, and you don't want to do that because you can make it right a mess. I want to, without interrupting you too much, Sue, I want to get a bit of a feel for the background to this. You're a very young man. You're 24?
24, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, we love young entrepreneurs, which is fabulous. Where did the idea come from? How did you go about developing it? We'll ask you loads. Start with that. Where did the idea come from? How did you go about developing it? And then you can tell us a bit about where it's made, how it's made, and what you do.
Yeah. So basically, I studied sports science at Swansea University.
Right. Okay.
And we were looking at ways of getting things into the body to increase performance quickly. So if you're a football player, rugby player, at halftime you need to get that boost, that next edge.
In my day, it was just a banana.
I was going to say, is that when you see like tennis players eating bananas? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, trying to refuel, trying to get things into the body to give them that next edge. And especially after halftime, it's the ideal opportunity for it. So we were actually looking, originally the concept sort of came from a mouthwash. So you'd swirl a really high sugar, high caffeine mouthwash around your mouth. And again, the benefit of that is you absorb it through your gum. So it's a really quick way of getting that benefit. So that sort of got me thinking to a certain extent. And I had quite a long summer holiday and a lot of time to think about it.
And this is when you're 21?
Yeah, yeah. I was 20 at the time. It was end of second year. And so from that, I sort of started researching this and came across chewing gum as a delivery mechanism, so nicotine gum, things like that, and saw all the benefits of delivering some nutrients or caffeine in that way. And I couldn't find anything else on the market similar to it, so I thought I'd call up as many chewing gum manufacturers as possible to see whether or not we could develop something.
So you're a student and you're ringing up chewing gum manufacturers and you just thought that was a perfectly normal thing to do?
It seemed normal at the time.
That's just amazing. That's very entrepreneurial.
Oh, thanks.
And I presume there weren't many around, so we're talking about Wrigley's and maybe people like that.
Yeah, so there was barely any. I think there was none in the UK that I could contact, and there was sort of Europe wide. And in the end, I didn't go towards the chewing gum manufacturers. It was the pharmaceutical industry that I looked to for it, with the nicotine gum side of things and all of that. Mm. And so it was a case of taking that concept and putting it in a gum, and it requires a bit more technology than a normal gum, which is why the gum's a bit different. So,
and what actually is chewing gum? I mean, Paul said at the beginning of the program it's rubber, but I don't buy that. What actually is it?
It is pretty. It's a polymer. It's made up of a series of polymers.
Oh, you were right. So you were right, Paul. You can't say anything because he's chewing. So is it a plastic? Is it a rubber? What is it?
It's like, well, it's a combination of a few things. So it would be a plastic and a sort of rubber base to it. You can get natural. You can get all sorts of different types as well.
And what makes it chewy? Is that just the natural formation of those chemicals? It just happens to be like that, or do you have to do something to it?
No, you have to do something to it. it starts off as a chewy as it is, yeah. And then it's sort of refined and glued together depending on which process you do.
And as I was saying, my mum said that if I swallow it, it would stick to my heart. You shouldn't swallow chewing gum, should you?
There's no side effects to swallowing chewing gum. I wouldn't recommend swallowing lots of chewing gum because it's not designed to be swallowed, but it doesn't stay in your system for...
So it does break down.
It does break down,
excellent,
yeah.
Thank goodness. It doesn't plug your stomach up.
No.
So you find a manufacturer?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi, I'm in my 20s. I don't know anything about running a business or anything about food production. Can you make me some chewing gum? How did all that happen?
I sort of read quite a bit about how you pitch a business to bigger companies and things like that. And I was looking at the energy market and its value and making a good business proposition for why they should produce this product. The energy drink market being one of the most lucrative markets in the world in terms of the FMCG products.
Yeah.
And so from that, I was saying this is the market potential and these are the benefits of the product over what's on the market. And they also agreed that it was a good opportunity. So
how did you scrape your money together? We've got some really nice packaging here, for example. So somebody presumably has designed this. It's called Blockhead Energy Gum. And the one I particularly like is mint and caffeine and vitamins. And you get 10 pieces in here. It's sugar-free.
Mm-hmm.
It works in just 5 minutes. I'm expecting to run around the studio just in about 2 minutes to go.
Yep.
And it's black and it's very modern. It doesn't look like an FMCG product, actually. It doesn't look like a fast-moving consumer good product. It looks funky and quite techy.
It's very actually. Well packaged, isn't it? Yeah. Who designed that for you, Dan?
So how did
I actually have a friend who was a designer for quite a big design agency at the time.
Smart.
And we actually went skating and discussed this. And
so hold on. So what you did is you force fed him a load of your chewing gum and he got so hyper he designed the packaging for you.
Yeah,
I get it.
On sort of mates rates as opposed to agency
absolutely.
Rates.
Absolutely, and why not?
That's yeah,
brilliant.
So you came across that.
So how do you get somebody to make the product that you wanted? Did you literally just go to a manufacturer and give them a specification?
Yeah, so I gave them the ingredients list of sort of what the actives I wanted to go into it, having no knowledge of what makes up gum at all at the time. And they then produced a series of samples which got sent to me right when I was doing my dissertation, which was brilliant because I was in desperate need of energy at the time and so were a lot of my friends. So I sold it or gave it to quite a lot of my mates to get feedback on each flavour. And to be honest, it didn't start tasting like that. It started tasting really quite horrible.
Yeah.
And it was a case of refining it from there. But
yeah, getting what you wanted.
Yeah.
And how did you get this idea that instead of packaging chewing gum in the usual way, you package it almost like a pharmaceutical product? Because it gives it a real bit of credibility, I feel.
Yeah, so it's because it is similar to the vitamin and tablet market because it's produced completely under cold manufacturing. So it's not like normal chewing gum, which is produced under really hot manufacturing processes. So if we were to do that, the vitamins, the caffeine, they wouldn't really work after right. we'd gone through that process. So it's produced. It's effectively produced by hitting it really hard and compressing it together to make what you see in front of you. So it has to be stored in that because that's the way in which these products.
Cool.
And it's got quite a lot of caffeine in. Most of these things have. Caffeine gets a bit of a bad press sometimes. What's your feelings?
I think it's like with anything. Just don't have too much of it. If you're having, I don't know, 15 coffees a day along with a load of Blockheads, then...
Has he been watching me again?
I don't drink coffee actually much. I'm a tea drinker, but I think there's quite a lot of caffeine in tea as well.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
So I probably do have too much caffeine. Mm.
Yeah.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because it's coming full circle here. Because you asked earlier, Sue, about the history of chewing gum, and it's something I know a little bit about. I don't know why I know a little bit about it, but I do. The original chewing gum, which was originally produced by Wrigley's, was from the sap of the chicle tree. And the chicle tree was another one of those Aztec things. And the Aztecs got all the good stuff for some reason. Chocolate, cocaine, coffee and chewing gum.
Yeah.
What more can you want?
Yeah. They were pretty wired.
They were pretty wired, which is probably why they went out of fashion quite quickly. But it was originally made from the sap of a chicle tree. and which is why one of the old brands of chewing gum was called Chiclets, if you remember. And I'm sure we've moved on since then. But it's got an interesting history because it was chewed for a long, long time by Aztecs before it was made into a candy, what the Americans call a candy product. Mm. And they made it a candy product by smothering it in sugar, basically.
Which is what Americans are very good at in the food industry. Yeah. So you've managed to get this lovely packaging. How are you selling it? I know you can go on your website, and we'll give you a website out in a minute, so you can get it there. Have you got it anywhere else yet?
Yeah, so we're actually stocked in One Stop stores.
Really?
Yeah, very good. Nationwide with them. And
sorry, I missed that. Who?
One Stop. You know the One Stop shops?
Yeah,
which is a brilliant one.
He's a bit of an overachiever, this lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
How are you doing all this?
How are you doing this,
Danny?
I've got a good team with me.
Come on, spill the beans. How's this happening?
We also are in WH Smith's as well.
Wow.
So we're in a selective stores with WH Smith's, and we're trying to get in. That's in the retail side of things, trying to get into travel, which would be brilliant.
And if you don't mind me asking, how are you selling it? And what I mean by that is, are you selling it as a sweet? Or are you selling it as an energy product? Are you selling it as a supplement?
So that's been sort of, at the beginning, that was the hardest thing for us to work out, is almost what buyer do we speak to? Are we speaking to the confectionery buyer? Are we speaking to the energy drink buyer because it's an energy product? Or are we speaking to the sort of the vitamin, the supplement buyer? Yeah. And to be honest, we speak to all three.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So we originally got in to most of the places on a clip strip. So it could be hung next to energy drinks. It was impulsive, so it could be an impulsive purchase when people saw the benefits on the packet in comparison to a drink. And it also meant that we didn't have to wait necessarily for our shelf space for a new product, so we could get the product in there quickly, which worked really well for us.
Smart.
Absolutely. Sure. This is fabulous. I'm loving this. I like young entrepreneurs anyway, and I like the dynamism and the attacking of the marketplace.
Also the intelligence of working out.
Absolutely.
As you said, having on a strip hanging down gives you better control. You don't have to wait for shelf space. And it's just great packaging, which is so important. If it is an impulse buy, it needs to have great packaging.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good. You're going to make millions, aren't you? You're just a natural entrepreneur.
Oh, it's just more about having fun with it, really. We've been to so many great events already, and we've met incredible people as well through doing it. So.
Do you mind me asking that? And tell me to mind my own business, but how did you fund the startup of this? How did you actually start the business? At what point did you say, do you know what, I'm going to knock out some energy gum here?
Well, I got all the samples and stuff. The company I used to produce it gave them to me for free.
Right.
To start with. So they did all the NPD side of things. And I actually went to a trade show, the National Convenience Show, and I got quite a big order from there, which I used a bank to supply the funds for
credit,
it,
yes.
Right, and then imported it all in. So it worked that way, and it was a cash flow funding case, which was quite good.
Yeah.
And I put my savings into it, and my parents helped me out a bit with the extra stuff. But
I'm loving this whole story. Very good stuff.
Very successful. And it's being manufactured in Europe somewhere?
Yeah, in Europe. So you've got two different manufacturing plants, one in Denmark and one in Italy. So.
Very good, very good. Well, I really like the taste of it. I'm going to look up the caffeine levels. So 200 milligrams, is that right, Inna?
No, in per piece, it's 50 milligrams.
50 milligrams.
So,
what's a cup of coffee?
So a cup of coffee, it largely depends on coffee to coffee.
Sure.
So it's roughly around 100 milligrams, sometimes more depending on where you get it from.
Half a cup of coffee.
Yeah, half a cup of coffee, half a energy drink as well. So if you take a 250 mil
I'm not a great gum chewer, actually, but I might do that, Paul, because it's actually quite refreshing. I don't think I'm buzzing, but it could be my age. Are you buzzing?
I'm always buzzing. I've just had a tweet, actually, from a listener.
Have you?
With a factoid. They've said, here's a factoid for you. Chewing gum is banned in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
However, dental specialist or nicotine gum is allowed as long as it's prescribed by a doctor.
Oh.
That's interesting, isn't it? But if you spit it on the pavement, you're dead.
You're still dead. Mm. Yeah, you're still dead. Well, I've worked on a government thing quite a long time ago now, about 7 or 8 years ago, looking at how we stop people dropping gum on the floor.
Mm.
So we did some really interesting research about the different types of people and how they dispose of their gum. And there's some people who actually just spit it out.
Mm.
There's other people who sort of take it out of their mouth and hide it.
Mm.
But it's a real problem on pavements. It's a real problem because they have to clear it up and it's costing millions and millions of pounds a year. So if you really, really want to succeed, Danny, I think all we need to do is get some sort of thing that's, you know, that actually it breaks down.
We've been actually doing quite a lot of research into that at the moment. That's one of our main pushes for it. But what I will say on that as well is we'll hopefully in the sort of next 6 months have a bit of news on that front. But what I say about this in the meantime is, because it's in a blister pack, while not the most appealing thing, but if you are in dire need or, say, walking around London where there's a lack of bins quite a lot of the time,
put it back in the blister pack.
You can put it back in the blister pack.
Perfect idea.
I always put mine behind my ear.
That's because you don't have any hair, Paul.
Oh, no, that's true.
My daughter did that, and then we had to cut all her hair all around her ear. It was awful. It was absolutely terrible. But you can do that because you don't have
any
hair.
It's another one of the millions of benefits of not having hair.
Yes, obviously.
Absolutely.
So I think it's an absolutely great product, and I've never seen it before. So I'm guessing if people are in the one-stop shop or in Smith's, they should look out for it. It's very, very distinctive. It's a very square packet. And if you want to know a bit more about it, you need to go on to blockheadenergy.com.
Yep, that's it.
blockheadenergy.com. And you can order it online there, can't you?
You can order it online there. And in August, we're actually launching into Tesco forecourts as well. So if you happen to
be in a Tesco forecourt.
Absolutely.
You must have loads of women just chasing you because you're just an amazing entrepreneur. Is that correct? He's saying no to that one. He's saying no.
Or even loads of investors waving money at him.
Yes, definitely.
You've also got a Twitter handle, Dan?
Yep, it's at Blockhead Energy as well.
Okay, so give Dan a follow on the Twitter too.
That's brilliant. And we didn't really talk about Kent Life's website and all the stuff that's on there either. So if anybody's interested in Kent Life, there's some really interesting articles just on the website. Obviously, buying the magazines are very glossy. They're great to have about the place. And that's Kent Life. And that's got a dash between it, kent-life.co.uk. And Sarah's the editor. Really important, if you are a food producer, you really should go on their site and have a look at their Food and Drink Awards for 2016. The entries close in August. So if you're doing something really interesting, I'm looking at you, Danny. I'm looking over at you, then you should be entering your particular product in there. And we've had some great people on the programme, so you really should. Paul, you're involved with quite a lot of awards, and it does help in terms of your marketing, doesn't it, if you've got a new product, if you use it properly?
Without a shadow of a doubt, you don't even have to win the award to get a lot of kudos out of it and a lot of recognition. Even making the finals, even to a local award, will do enormous benefit for your business if you use it. It just gives you credibility because most awards are either voted for by customers or people that are very influential in marketplaces. And either of those giving you recognition
almost gives you a quality mark in a way, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah. It's that recognition. It's like a super mega meta TripAdvisor. Because people have voted for you and said, out of all of these brilliant things we've seen, you are the brilliantest. Yeah?
Yeah. And if you can then use it in your publicity, anything, you know, maybe even on your packaging sometimes, it's a really good endorsement of your product.
Yeah.
So go on to kent-life.co.uk and look out for the Food and Drink Awards, which are held in conjunction with Kent on Sunday.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's about it. I'm hoping that this week you might cook some salmon and asparagus and a bit of pasta from scratch, Paul.
I might not cook the pasta, but I'm heavily into asparagus and I eat quite a lot of asparagus. And my favourite little asparagus dish is cheese on toast with asparagus.
Never had that.
Have you not?
No.
Oh, you need to have that. Cheese on toast. Cook the asparagus separately and then just drop it in the cheese as the cheese is bubbling and melting so it folds over the top.
That does sound quite nice.
Yeah, it is. Oh, trust me on that. Nice. Asparagus on toast. Asparagus on cheese on toast.
And asparagus, of course, with salmon is a match that everybody knows about. So,
absolutely.
So get some good stuff in there. So I'd like to say thank you to Sarah Sturt from Kent Life and the incredible, I would say, Danny Lowe. Watch out for him in the future. Of the lovely energy gum, which is Blockhead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Lovely
thank
to meet
you. Thank
you
very much.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Danny, and thank you, Sue. We'll be back with the Food Talk Show next Thursday at 4 p.m. Have a great week.